In today's episode, I speak with Joran Hoffmann, who is the founder of Reditus. Reditus gives you the chance to create a link, give it to creators, give it to podcasters, to agencies, etc. And if someone is clicking the link and making a purchase, this person gets something out of it, mostly like a defined amount of money or like a percentage. And this is really interesting if you build a SaaS product, want to sell it to B2B. And I would say, let's get it started. Welcome back to New Digital Economics episode. Today I speak with Rowan Hoffmann, who is the founder of Reditus. Happy to have you today in the podcast.
Cheers, thanks. Thanks for having me, Luis.
How did your life went to now having like a SaaS startup? Or maybe first of all, do you want quickly to say what Reditus is, then we jump into your life and then we talk more about Reditus?
Sure. Yeah. So Reditus is an affiliate management platform. It's a SaaS company, so software as a service, where we help other SaaS companies to set up an affiliate program. So what that means is somebody else is going to do the marketing for you. And if somebody purchases a subscription via them, you're going to give them a kickback fee in return. So it's revenue share. So the SaaS company only pays when they receive paid clients. And currently we're building a marketplace. So we have SaaS companies on one side, affiliates on the other side, and we match them together. So if somebody has an audience a SaaS company is looking for, we can show it to them. And then from there, they can negotiate to start working together.
How did it start that you were interested like in building entrepreneurial stuff? So can you give us a little flow via your life?
Yeah.
What did you do? But ended up here today being like the founder of Reditus.
Yeah, how far do you want me to go back? I guess that's the question.
What was the first thing you were building?
I'll answer the building question, but I think like one thing I always I guess like defined myself already at the beginning, like when I was doing my bachelor's, my teacher basically told me like your English is terrible. Like did somebody ever told you that? Like I was just getting out of 0 to 10, I was getting like 5.5, which just was just enough to pass the exam. At one point I was like, okay, I might have to do something about it. So I just decided to do my internship third year in Australia. So I just flew to Sydney, arranged my internship 2 weeks before I was going there. I just booked a hostel for the first 3 days. So I just flew to the other side of the world without even knowing, I guess, where I'm going to sleep next week, which was a bit fun. And this is kind of like a bit my life, as in I kind of have it, okay, I'll just do it. And then I'll figure out, I guess, along the way, how I actually get things done. And then in the fourth year, I did my internship in the US. And then I got the comment that my Dutch was pretty terrible because we changed sentences. Like, how you say sentences in English, we say it the opposite sometimes in Dutch, even with the numbers. So it was a compliment because my English got better and I was actually taking the English approach to writing. So that's a bit, I guess, like how my entrepreneurial, even though it's not entrepreneurial, but like just going out there and going. And then the first business I started was a pie business. I drop shipped pies. Fun story, like I come from a small village and there was this pie which was really famous in the region. And when it was my birthday, when I was working at a corporate, I wanted to buy this pie. Couldn't find it anymore. Found out that the bakery retired. Then somebody took it over. He got bankrupt. And then the pie was just not being made anymore. After some more investigation, I found that somebody is still selling it in Utrecht. So I went there, purchased it, and then the pie was frozen at the time I was cutting it at coffee break at 11 in the morning. So I was like, okay, how can this famous pie go bankrupt, go away, and now into this frozen bad thing? So I ended up buying the rights to sell the pie at the guy who manages, like, I guess, like bankrupt businesses. Built a web shop, found a bakery who wants to bake it for me, and then started to drop ship pies, basically.
That means it was e-commerce, or means like people were like collecting it at the place, but someone else was baking it? Or
yeah,
how so did you organize?
The bakery was, I was taking the orders. So it was kind of like e-commerce. So I was taking the orders on my web shop, which I had built. Then the orders were being sent towards the bakery. He was making them. He was delivering them. And then I would pay him basically. But it was
crazy.
Yeah, I mean,
that's such an untypical like dropshipping business.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's like that's, I think, when I learned about margins, and I guess like on pies, you don't have a lot of margins if you don't do enough volume, which we didn't do with the business. So, I think after 2 years or something like that, I sold it towards somebody else, and then he took it forward.
Crazy. But. Like, did you do this full time? So was it something where you were like fully committed, or
no? How did it work? No. Okay. So this one, I bought the pie for my birthday during the corporate life, and this is also what I did on the side. So I was just working at the corporate, and I was just, it was almost like a hobby, I guess, where you just had this business on the side, and it was not making any money. I think I, in the end, like after 2 years, I kind of ran break even with. Not with the time, of course, but at least with the money spent and earned in it.
How do you feel about like doing a business by side? Because I know some people who have like a really clear perspective on do this full time, it will not work if you don't. Or I have people who are like, yeah, that's the only way to start. It just makes sense. Do you have an opinion on this?
Yeah, I mean, not everybody has the ability to go full time right away, right? Like you need a lot of money and time often, and you need a lot of mistakes. So I would always do it on the side, at least starting on the side, like trying to validate, for example, your idea already, trying to maybe even get your first users, first clients, to really understand what I'm trying to do. Does it actually make sense? And am I going to earn money with it? And does it allow me to go full time? So I would always do that, because when I look at Redditors, I did this also on the side in I think in the first year and a half, where I basically earned money with my full-time job. I spent my money which I earned towards developers. They built a platform, and then allows me at one point to do a lot of sales, at a lot of calls, and then I was at a point where I just, things were too mixed up. I was having too many calls for my side business that I was like, okay, I can't do it together anymore. And then it was a smooth transition to basically say, I'm going to go full time now.
Mm-hmm. So you also don't have investors in Redditors?
Nope. No, we're still fully bootstrapped right now.
So that gives you a lot of freedom, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it gives you a lot of freedom, gives you a lot of headache, I guess, at the beginning. Like we're still early stage. So cash flow for us is still every month somewhat of a struggle, I guess. Just because we charge annual upfront for our clients mostly. So we do get cash in, but we need to do the trick like every month still to make sure we can pay the bills without me having to put more money on the bank account. So once we get, I guess, past a profitability point, then I'm going to be super, well, I'm not going to be probably super relaxed, but I'm going to be a lot more relaxed, because then I can just really take things forward without having to worry about the money aspect or, yeah, the growth a VC would typically want from us.
Mm-hmm. But do you consider sometimes like getting big investor money in?
Yeah, I have my periods. I mean, if you're bootstrapping, like the biggest challenge you have is cash flow, right? Like especially at the beginning, even though if you started like on the side, like ideally you start full time when you can just pay yourself, or you can at least have like sustain yourself, or you saved up a lot where you can do it. I guess at one point, like if you don't have that yet, you're gonna think like, okay, well, how can I get money in, right? Like how can I keep this project going? So it's either selling more, which is always not that easy, or you can get a VC and try to invest. But then what I found out, it takes a lot of time. You need to have a lot of conversations, a lot of pitch decks, a lot of no's, a lot of, I guess, networking, where I was like, okay, this is not the best use of my time. I'd rather spend time on getting clients in, because the first thing VCs are going to ask, like, what is your MRR? What is your growth? Things like that. But you're investing all your time on trying to get them in, where they want to have the opposite. So at one point I was like, okay, this is not going to work for us. Let's just grow, let's keep focusing fully on growing our revenue. And then from there, if we ever want to take an investment, it's going to be a lot easier because then we have the right numbers to actually show towards them. So it's not that I'm against it, but I speak to a lot of people because I also run a podcast, right? And I think like people who got really far are bootstrapped. They say they would never do it like differently again, which is easy to say if you have 20 million annual recurring revenue. But like, I do think bootstrapping is the way to go if you're able to do it, which I think is the biggest thing. Like, you need to be able to survive the first period.
Yeah, I mean, that's like I speak to a lot of people. A lot of people really struggle, like in the beginning, like with either getting money if they don't have a trust, like if they haven't built stuff before, if they don't have a trust record so far. But at the other side, like financing yourself via an agency model or whatever, it can like take away the time from building like a software tooling. Yeah. So you were like, when you were working and doing Redutus by side, you were like in sales and in account management and in customer success. Is this correct?
Yeah.
That's what I see on LinkedIn.
Correct. Yeah. I used to work at a company called Leadfeeder. I started working there when there were only 18 people at that company. So I started doing sales first in Netherlands, then Benelux, then DACH. And then when I sold a lot, there was nobody actually taking care of those clients. So I went into customer success. And I think I worked there for 4.5, 5 years-ish. When I left, I was head of customer success. So I had a team of 30 people where we basically were responsible for the entire revenue. So making sure people don't churn, don't leave. And we try to expand them as much as possible. So started in sales, then went to customer success. But I guess like my red line is that I talk to clients, I guess, no matter trying to bring in more money or keeping them happy.
If you follow like the Y Combinator like approach on how to build a startup, they always say like talk to users. So as you were probably talking with lots of people, do you think this was helpful for building Redutus?
Yeah, I mean, just to give an example, we built a second marketplace last December, or we started building a second marketplace last December. So we already got some, how do you call it, like initial questions, like can we do X, Y, Z with the platform, which we couldn't. So when we were about to, I guess, like thinking about building it, what we did is we just built sketches. So in Figma, just, okay, well, what are we going to build? Then we had, I think, 30 client calls in 1 week, where we basically showed all the clients, okay, this is what we first didn't even show them the sketch. We just asked them questions like, are these challenges also related to you? What is your biggest challenges? How would you like to get it solved? What can we do, et cetera? So we kind of had all the input without showing them anything. And then we showed them what we had planned. And they were like, okay, this is exactly what we're looking for. And when you hear that 13 times in a week, then you're like, okay, we should build this. So didn't do it at the beginning, I guess, at Redutus, but we definitely have it in mind. Like whenever we do something new, so we're going to build a new reporting feature soon, I'm going to have at least 5 client calls to show them the Figma file before
the developers
even start building it. So you don't have to iterate it too much, I guess, once you have built it.
Yeah, I guess it's a perfect way to talk to users before developers build stuff, which is not used in the end.
Exactly, because you don't want to build a tool with a lot of features which people don't use. You want to have features which actually are being used and are helpful. So like, how do you do it is by talking to your clients to figure out if they need it.
When talking to clients at Leadfeeder, what inspired you to start Redutus? What was the question or the problem you were seeing?
Yeah. So Redutus actually started out of, I guess, somewhat of a different venture I had, salesforcemarketing.co. So the question I always received is, okay, Leadfeeder is a great tool. Which tool should I use more? When you have 5 to 10 demos a day, you get really sick of that question. I kept showing like the best tools they could use. What I did is I just built a website out of it, which is called salesforcemarketing.co. Not doing anything with that at the moment. It's still live. But what I did there is I just listed the best sales and marketing tools on there, wrote content about sales and marketing. At one point, the website grew, I think, to 25,000 organic visitors per month. And my idea was I'm going to make money by referring these SaaS companies with an affiliate link. Ran into so many issues, like I had to log into all these portals separately, or I just didn't trust the tracking. So there was one, I guess now competitor of Redditors, where I was like, this can't be true. I have 15,000 clicks in 1 year and I did not make one sale. Like that's it. For me, that was impossible. Contact their support a lot of times, couldn't get to the bottom of it. And then at one point I just decided, okay, well, this can be better. Let's just build it myself. So that's how Redditors got started.
Yeah, I have the same experience with like one of the bigger affiliate platforms where I know when I was driving traffic to them. And I know also compared like the numbers of other affiliate platforms. And it's so weird to me because I know, okay, I get some affiliate income via Amazon affiliate program. I mean, it's like just tiny numbers, like 10 euros per year or something. But not having like any successful leads on this one platform is kind of confusing to me.
Yeah.
So you guess people cheat there on purpose?
I honestly don't know. I never got to the bottom of it because I tried to contact their support a lot of the times. And at that time I was head of customer success. So I really hated how they were doing support. Because you had a conversation and then you would get a reply like 24 hours, 48 hours later. So a conversation would take like 2 weeks and still you didn't get the answer you're looking for. So I honestly don't know what it is. Like if it's either tracking capabilities or I don't think it's cheating because I don't think they can grow so big with doing that. It's just, I guess at one point as well, like if you are not trusting the platform, you kind of want to get in contact with the platform, right? And figure out like, am I doing something wrong or is it something on your end? And this is what we're doing right now. So we provide also live chat support towards affiliates. So I guess like if there's anything wrong or if they suspect anything is wrong, they can just contact us and we'll investigate it like right away, which I think is fair and is business good because if they if you have any issues, then you're not going to recommend the SaaS company anymore and then they're not going to earn. And when they earn, they pay us more. So it's in our best interest to make you successful. So the SaaS company becomes successful and in the end, we're going to grow.
What can go wrong? So is it like tracking is done via cookies or how is the tracking done?
Yeah. So the majority is done by cookies. Like we have some enterprise clients who do everything via APIs, which is server-side tracking, but most of it is done by cookies. So for example, like we don't have to have cookie consent, which means is like they should put it on the mandatory cookies. So it always gets placed. So that's definitely one. And sometimes people change their website, right? Or they change the sign up form and then they forgot that they had Redditors in there or they forgot they had the script in there. So like tracking wise, that's, I guess, like the biggest thing which can go wrong that we won't track anything anymore because they make changes to the site or to the sign up flow.
Okay. And it's important, I guess, what's the most common problem that like if a cookie should be a mandatory cookie, which is like one of the essential ones. So like if you choose different things, then you can accept all cookies or deny cookies. But denying cookies means you are accepting only essential cookies. And I mean, sometimes they also have better wordings for the cookie butter, like accepting or only essential. Okay, got it. With the implementation, that's really easy, fast forward, or do you have like a long setup process for a customer?
No, it's really straightforward, I guess. I mean, our record time of installation from a client is, I think, 2.5 minutes. He was a developer, so he was able to do it like himself quickly, but it's super simple. Like it's adding a tracking script to the site, which is same as Google Analytics, adding one line of code in the sign-up form, which sends us the email, and then 95% of our clients use Stripe, and then it's two button clicks to connect Stripe. So that's kind of the technical setup, and then you will have to set up your affiliate program, like how much money do you give away, or percentage, how much percentage you give away for how long, adding the resources, things like that. So let's say it takes, I guess it can take 30 minutes to however long, I guess, how many materials you need to prepare. So the better the foundation a SaaS company has, did they already run paid ads? Do they already have visuals available? Do they already have their ICP defined? Do they have materials for the affiliates? The quicker they're able to launch like a successful program.
How are the commissions like changing at the moment? I think there are more affiliate deals now which are lifetime. Is this a trend you see?
I mean, lifetime is really popular with early stage companies just because you can create like a tool right now, right? And people think like, okay, well, if I just put a good commission percentage and a long period, then people will start recommending us. That's what you see a lot. Like, for example, Semrush had that in the past, right? Where you can get 40% for lifetime. They came back to it as well. Because if you look at the margins, I guess, it's already down 40%. So trend-wise, like early stage companies typically indeed start with lifetime and then often they would come back on it at one point and they will keep the affiliates, for example, in that bucket and then the new affiliates will get something else. But I will always look at what is the average deal size a SaaS company have. And then from there, what is, for example, 20%? What is 30%? How much money can Louis earn when they start referring to X? And then from there, you can kind of determine, is it worth his while to make sure that he starts recommending us?
You were doing affiliate marketing yourself, right?
Yeah.
For some time. How was your experience as a publisher? Because you said like it's a little bit on ice. Because I think like versus gold digger movement of people who are like, yeah, I'm going to be rich by doing affiliate deals.
Yeah. It's not that easy, I guess, as most of people would say on Instagram. Like it's not just, oh, you're going to sign up all these programs and suddenly you're on a beach in Bali making 10K per month. Like it's still a lot of work. Because if you think about it, you need to have access to the ideal customer profile of the SaaS company, of the company you're referring. So the bigger your audience, the easier it is. And I do think most of the courses, the guys you see on Instagram, they make most of their money by selling those courses instead of the actual affiliate income. But yeah, you have to keep in mind, like if you don't have a network, if you don't have an audience, then it's really hard to start making money, right? But you have to start somewhere. But the bigger the audience you have, the bigger the network, like it is a newsletter, a YouTube channel, a TikTok channel, LinkedIn, a website, anything basically. If you have an audience, it means if somebody is willing to get in front of that audience and give you something in return. So like the best advice I guess I can give is start building an audience as soon as possible. So being this podcast, for example, being an example, like you're now starting to build an audience, people are going to follow you. So at one point, if you want to monetize the podcast, you already have an audience.
Mm-hmm. How is it with your podcast? I think it's interesting that you as a startup founder also do a podcast, but I think it's a clever thing, especially like as you're in a niche where this can be interesting. How did it start it and how is it going?
Yeah, so the podcast started pure out of selfish reasons, I guess. So I'm growing a SaaS. It's my first SaaS I'm growing. So I'm running into a lot of challenges, a lot of questions, a lot of things I don't know. So how I got started is just by interviewing industry experts who already did it or are doing it and just getting knowledge for myself, basically. And because I'm interviewing them, I can use that as a podcast and then distribute it to others. So that's how it's got started. And the good thing for me is that my podcast is called Growing a B2B SaaS. I'm building a B2B SaaS. My target audience is B2B SaaS. So it's like, it's really niche, but everything is towards that audience. So like, I don't expect, I guess like 100,000 followers in 2 years, but the people who are going to follow me are really specific, doing the exact same thing I'm trying to do, growing a B2B SaaS, and they could be my potential clients. So how I did it, like really targeting my potential clients and building like a thought leadership in that industry.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. How much Or can you give a few examples when this was helpful on your way? So did you get clients out of podcasting, out of guests, out of people listening?
There's a lot of indirect benefits, I guess. Like I do think we got clients out of it, but it's really hard to track. So just to give an example, like I did live podcast recordings at SaaS Summit in Berlin 1.5 years ago. I did a live podcast recording at SaaS Open in Austin with Adam Robinson, which is like a LinkedIn guru at the moment. I did live podcasts in Morocco at SaaS Talk Founder Membership Retreat. I did one at the TechBond Awards in Romania this year. I might be doing one at B2B Rocks next 2 months in Paris. So there's a lot of, I guess, like visibility towards the podcast, but then like I'm always wearing my blue hoodie with Redditors on it, so people get to know my face, get to know the brand. So it's like indirect benefit. And you get a lot of listeners on the podcast. I think we now crossed, I think, 1,000 followers on Spotify. And we have, for example, an ad in the middle of the podcast, which is going toward Redditors. So people get to hear the brand as well. And that's the only thing I do regarding my company in it. So it's, I don't know if we really get like clients out of it, but how I also see it, like by interviewing the industry experts and them sharing their knowledge and me using, I guess, their name and their face, it gives a lot more credibility to what we're doing. So I kind of leverage their network, their expertise to grow my own business.
And I guess it's amazing also for learning, right? Because I wouldn't consider myself an expert in many things I'm talking about in this podcast, but I invite a lot of people who are experts and know stuff because they build things successfully. Yeah, I think it's great for learning.
In my case, like I'm again running into a lot of issues. So if I have an issue myself, I sometimes just see, okay, who do I have in my network who's really knowledgeable, and I just get them on the podcast. And then, like, you have the time you record stuff, which is more towards the audience. But sometimes before and after, I can ask, like, okay, well, I'm actually what you just said in the podcast, I'm doing X, Y, Z. How would you do it? And then off record, I might just ask specific things towards my business.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. It's just clever. Target audience. What is your primary target audience and how do you engage with them? And I think also what's interesting is how do you differentiate from different platforms? Because I think there are a lot of affiliate platforms. What is your like differentiating?
So B2B SaaS, that's the only thing we focus on, which is already quite, I guess, like specific. If you even narrow it more down, product-led growth company. So a SaaS tool where you can sign up yourself without talking to a human and go to paid yourself. That's like really our niche, mostly Europe and US company based. Then how do we reach them? Like, we're bootstrapped, so we do everything. This is why also I do the podcast. Like, the podcast generates a lot of content, so not just the recording, but also we generate 5 to 10 clips out of it. We publish it on any platform you can think of. I have a LinkedIn profile page for it where I tag the people who came on to it, publish the clips also on there. So there's a lot of, I guess, like content creation, which led to inbound. And this is currently how we're getting stuff in. My personal profile grew on LinkedIn to 14,000 right now, I think. I'm on my way to 15. Post almost every day, a bit less lately, but this is also where a lot of people get to see me, get to sign up and go from there. So at the moment, we have not been doing, I mean, some small experiments, but not much outbound paid ads or anything like that.
Nice. And the revenue model, how do you earn money? So do you get a commission off a commission or do you have like a fixed price per year or how does it work?
No, yeah. So we have a SaaS model where it's basically just a subscription fee. So we would look at how much money is a SaaS company making via our platform, and then they would fit into this bucket. So to give an example, you start off with a subscription with us for $69 a month. You can grow up to 5K monthly recurring revenue. So you're going to earn a lot more money than you're actually paying us already. once you hit the 5K threshold, you move up to the 199 plan. So you're going to pay us $200 and you can earn up to 10K monthly recurring revenue. So they're fixed pricing fees based on the monthly recurring revenue you're making. And we don't take any commission from the payments they're making.
Why did you decide to not do that?
I mean, it overcomplicates things a little bit at the beginning. Like when you're early stage, you want to have it like super simple. I like the value-based approach, even though commission is, of course, value-based approach. But if you're going to do the commissions, I think people are going to look more into, are things really legit? They might take things off platform. They might commit more fraud. And I want to do proper business. So I guess, I don't know. Like for me, it didn't feel right yet to do it, because I know most of our competitors do it. We might go that route at one point as well, but the thing we have right now is super clear pricing, value based. We can just have everything on the side. People understand it. They like it. I don't see a reason yet why we should change it right now.
Mm. And I mean, it's easier like to calculate the numbers if you just know, okay, that are our fixed costs.
Yeah.
So I guess it's an easy sell if you say, okay, that's the amount per month. Or not an easy sell because, of course, selling is not always easy, but it's easier if people really know what they can plan with, what numbers they can plan with, especially when people know, okay, sometimes we have a churn rate, people sign a contract and then they don't want to go on, but they signed it and then there's a discussion or whatever. Yeah. Especially in B2B. You were talking a lot about we. So do you have a team right now?
Yeah. We're with three guys full-time, two developers and myself. They're in Romania. I'm in the Netherlands. And then with the podcast, like I have somebody who edits it for me in Kenya. And then we have some, like I guess, agency/consultants to do specific things like the website, blog writing, etc.
How did you find people in Kenya, Romania?
I think actually the guy from Kenya, like I got him from the podcaster network I'm part of, where we're part of. So I came on a podcast and then I just asked him like, well, how do you do the editing? And then he said like, oh, I have this guy who does it for me. I think he still has time. So I just had a conversation with him. So I kind of just took his warm recommendation. With Romania, I started first paying through an agency or through like a, I guess like a platform. I hired a developer, worked out pretty well, but then you pay the middleman. So at one point we decided, I guess, like to cut the middleman and started working together. And then he had a friend who was also interested in a project we were doing. So then we got him on board. So this is, I guess, like how we now are with the team. Well, we have.
Nice.
Yeah.
Because I guess, talking about numbers, you pay like half the money or a third of the money you would pay if you would hire people from the Netherlands.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, like because the living expenses here are a lot higher than mm-hmm. in Romania. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's insane. Like when I was backpacking, for example, in Vietnam, like, it's easily possible in Europe to pay 10 euros or 20 euros for food, like if you have lunch, and just getting like a full meal, like amazing dish for 2 euros or something, of course, also makes life expenses way lower.
Yeah.
on a daily basis.
Yeah, but it doesn't always mean like good developers want to get paid less, right? Like, I mean, they're not. You can now work for almost any company anywhere. And especially in Romania, they found, I guess, like working for a US company is really lucrative and they would get like paid normally. So how I keep the salaries low is also by giving away equity. So I guess.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
So you're going to build that's like.
True. That's insane. I didn't follow about that. So how is the equity structure right now?
Like it's with a vesting schedule. So you would give away, like you would have a cliff at the beginning, so they would start building up equity after 3 months, and then they have to keep working for 36 months to get the full equity, basically, we agreed. So that, like, if you're going to start your own company, this is a perfect way where you can kind of have them commit longer term, against the decreased salary, so you can kind of work together towards like the end goal. And if they leave early, then they haven't vested all their shares yet, which is good for you because you haven't given away everything just at the beginning.
Is this done via virtual stock options, or how do you do that?
Yeah, we just I don't know how we even call it. I think we it's VAR, virtual appreciation rights, something like that. It's just a document in the end, which we signed. I do everything a lot on good trust, I guess, with the people I work with. So we signed the documents. We have a tool which is now in place where they can see how much is vested month over month. There's some free tools you can use for that. So
that's how. Do you know the name of the tool?
I can look it up.
Okay, maybe we just put it in the show notes,
yeah. And
you can check afterwards. But I think that would be interesting to check. Cool. Do you have advice for entrepreneurs, like people who want to build like their own SaaS business? I mean, you're, I guess, an expert now in growing a SaaS business from many angels. What would you tell someone who's like thinking about starting a SaaS business or already in the building process?
Yeah, you're gonna hear the most, I guess, like advice which you always hear, but it's super true, and I can speak out of own experience. Like, things don't go as fast as you want them to go, so you can make all your predictions, but most likely it's not gonna work out. And when I started, I thought, okay, I already worked at a SaaS company for so long, already seen so much. I can do differently. In the end, I couldn't either. So don't expect, I guess, that you're going to hit all your targets. In my recommendation, try to stay bootstrap as long as you can. So it's okay to work a full-time job and build something on the side, and really trying to figure out like who is your ideal customer profile, what kind of features do they need, and don't build too many features. Like, build a core product first, get users, get user validation, get your first paid clients, and then start building it together with them. So try not to fall into the trap of not shipping things, not launching things. Like, get it out there, get people to use it, get feedback, so you actually know if it's going to be a good product and a product people want to use. So put away your ego. Talk to clients, listen to them, like ask them questions, open questions, and not just get the answer from them you want to hear, but really trying to learn from them, like, is this going to work for them?
Did you had hard blockers to overcome? Because, I mean, for example, you were not a developer, you had to find people
who
can do that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we made the most typical mistake. So, for example, like, we started off with a really, I mean, the first thing I did is, I wanted to build a marketplace, so SaaS companies and affiliates on both sides. Then we started to build our MVP, and then I kind of got myself talked into that, okay, well, the MVP shouldn't be with the marketplace. We should just build the affiliate tracking. But then at the day we were about to launch, I was like, well, this is not actually what I want. So I asked the developers again, like, okay, if we launch this and we want to build a marketplace, is it going to take a lot longer with users or without users? And then the answer was, it's going to take a lot more time if we already have users. So at the first day of we're about to launch, I basically said, no, we're not going to do it. Let's build the marketplace right away. So I guess that was one. Then we used a lot of templates for the front end. So at one point when we were growing, we got users in, a lot of bugs were happening. We didn't know why. So I was finally at the point where I think I quit my job. We got paid clients in. I was like, okay, we're now ready to scale. We get a lot more users in, which also meant a lot more bugs, a lot more people complaining about the product. We ended up rebuilding the entire app for 6 months, which is a long time. If you just quit your job, you don't know how to develop, and you're like, okay, well, how long is it going to take? And like, the mistake we made is, I just had this goal. I want to have a rebuilt version of the app. That was my goal. We didn't chop it up into small bits and pieces, which was not good for the morale if you're just working on a project for 6 months. So I think that was like a mistake I made, as in, I don't know if, I mean, now it's easy to look back, but I don't know if I would have done it differently if I don't, knowing now what you know, I would do it differently. But at that time, it felt good, like just using templates, go quick, and then go from there. But yeah, we should have built it like in a proper way from the beginning.
Yeah, I had this before with projects which you built.
Yeah,
because rebuilding stuff is hard.
You're just at a point where you're finally able to grow and you finally get into the flow, and then you have to just take so many step backs. Like, we just built this skimmed version of the app we had before just to make it like work and ship like the new version, which was terrible. But after we did it, we started to take off. So I guess like this is also, if you're going to run into a challenge, no matter how big, like if you do believe in your idea and stick to it and keep having patience, then things can work out.
I think what I see in a lot of podcast guests is that they are really stubborn, that they are like so focused on, okay, that's the long-term goal, and then working 10 years or something on that long-term goal, sticking to that no matter what people say, rebuilding things and like being really, really stubborn about stuff. And I don't know, I really admire that. I really like that. So you also see that within Reditus that you are like, okay,
yeah,
this long-term mission.
Exactly. You're going to have a lot of challenges. And I mean, the only stories you often see like on LinkedIn or Crunchbase or whoever, that people sold their business for a lot of money, right? But it doesn't happen overnight. Like, there's not a lot of stories where people just build an app in 2 years and then sold it again. Like, it takes a lot of time and a lot of iterations to get to the point where they are.
What is the long-term goal? Is the long-term goal to be like the biggest player in the B2B market for affiliate deals or affiliate software? Or what do you have in mind? Like, thinking about like in 10, 20 years?
Yeah. So we want to basically become like the go-to market channel for indirect marketing, purely for B2B SaaS companies. So what that means is like, if a SaaS company wants to grow beyond just running paid ads called outbound SEO, what they all do themselves, if they want to have somebody in between, we want to be the channel to do so. So let's say a SaaS company wants to start selling via agencies, they can just go to our platform and then find agencies who are able to maybe sell for them, or find affiliates, or find publishers. So if they want to do anything with the indirect channel for B2B SaaS, then we want to be the platform they can go to.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a big enough goal for the next 10 years. Thank you so much for being today on the podcast and talking to me, explaining what you built and how you did that. I'm really proud to be like in the same podcast network as you are. And I think you did a really good job with Reditus, because I'm already using it with GoatSign, which was also here on the podcast, and also other software tools. So cool software platform you built.
Nice. Thanks. Appreciate it.
I hope you learned something today for how to grow your B2B SaaS company or how to grow your startup. If you're interested in Reditus, go to the show notes, click the link, then I get like affiliate deal, whatever thing. I didn't set it up, but I will after the episode. Thank you so much for listening. As always, please subscribe, please like the podcast, give it 5 stars. It helps me a lot, and I'm really appreciating any support. Thank you so much. See you next time. Bye-bye. Ciao.